Welcome to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by Interlochen Arts Academy students from the 2013-2014 school year. Our program opens with the Arts Academy Orchestra performing the overture to Colas Brignon.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Andrew Grossman. I am a senior from Miami, Florida. This piece, Blue Ranawala Turk, written by Dave Brubeck, is arranged by Chris Cockrell, and it creatively takes a percussion ensemble and makes it sound like a big band.
Listening to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students of the Interlochen Arts Academy.
Hi, my name is Carly Miller. I'm a creative writer from Michigan. A Northern Winter is an original fictional piece written in workshop here at the Academy. The first thing Elsie asks Aaron to do is go back out into the cold. She is standing at the counter, her red hair dark in the lamplight from the sitting room. On their first date, Elsie told him that there were two kinds of redheads in the world, pale-eyed strawberry blondes with milk-colored skin that freckles, or dark-eyed auburns who tan deeply who may or may not freckle. Elsie's eyes are the color of coal. Then she had shut them and leaned in. she had said were also going extinct, and bit his lip. Years later, and she does not bite his lip anymore. As he comes in the door, her back is to him. Aaron tries to touch her shoulder, but she edges away. The small hands are wrapped around the stem of a martini glass. They have a bar for mixing at parties and the formal living room, but they do not have the parties anymore. Elsie just mixes. "Can you go to the store?" she asks, turning away from the window. She pushes a piece of paper into his hand, a list. "I want to try a new recipe." When they got married, this is not what Aaron expected. A house that smells faintly like dirty laundry, cluttered rooms, Legos jammed in the couch cushions, construction paper drawings fluttering from table to floor. He did not anticipate a woman who moved away at his touch. The shadows settle beneath her eyes. They are tired eyes. Most nights, Aaron can feel her toss and turn around him. Sometimes he pulls himself up on one elbow and asks, "Honey, are you okay?" Sometimes Elsie gets up and stands by the window, looking out at the blanket of snow, sometimes for hours. She thinks that he's asleep. He opens his mouth to say, "Elsie, I'm tired." He only gets past her name. She turns away. She asks, "Can you take the kids?" Aaron does not believe that she wants to try a new recipe. He knows that what she really wants is a few hours in the house to herself so she can curl up in her chair and read her book and have her drink. "Of course," he says. He grabs the keys, calls for the kids. They are thrilled to be getting out of the house. They scramble noisily for their boots. The grocery store is half an hour away in Marquette. Everything is far away from everything else in the Upper Peninsula. Megan and Jake slump in the back seat as they travel southeast along Lake Superior, dark fir trees whisking past the car window. 4 years ago, they moved north after he caught her in bed with a coworker. He'd waited, numb, for her to get dressed, waited in the kitchen, staring at the wallpaper they'd bought together, the home they'd made together, listened to the tisk of the clock, a wedding present, as the excruciating seconds went by. The lover let himself out of the front door. Elsie came to Aaron hesitantly, arms crossed tight in front of her chest. He stared at her. Wonder if she had pulled the clothes off herself or if the man had done it for her. He said, "We can't stay here." She asked him where he thought he wanted to go. Aaron said, "North." Aaron had fond memories of the North. He'd spent his childhood summers on Whitefish Bay, splashing through Superior's mighty waves, running along the stony beaches. When his parents sold their cabin, it was a devastating blow, a piece of him being ripped away and flung into the water. He returned for college, drank beers at bonfires at the lake's edge. He took the first girl he well and truly loved to the lake. If he shuts his eyes, if he concentrates, Aaron can still get the curve of her face, the way the light shone on her blonde hair, just right. After that particular girl, Aaron had, of course, brought others, though they were never quite the same as she. If anything could heal Aaron, it was the lake, the bitter, wild savagery of the North. If anything could mend his and Elsie's relationship, it was standing on the edge of that lake with her. And it had healed him as much as it could, as much as one could heal. He was not so sure about her, but there had been no other co-workers in their bed. The store is brightly lit. After the dark car, it hurts his eyes. Aaron squints at the list, tries to decipher Elsie's handwriting. Chicken, something unintelligible. Canned tomatoes, something scrawled. The kids dance along the aisles, grabbing items off the shelf by whim and flinging them into the cart. He does not tell them no. He is picking through cucumbers when he sees the blonde ponytail. For years, Aaron has seen the blonde ponytail at the edge of his vision, has thought about the blonde ponytail, has wondered what he would do if he saw the blonde ponytail, maybe the blonde hair hanging down her back. Once or twice, Aaron has chased down the wrong woman, calling her name. She is not the wrong woman. She is the right woman. She is the woman whose name he has mistakenly been calling all these years. His stomach drops. She has her knuckles tight around the handle of the cart, is moving away. He abandons his own cart, shouts, "Kate!" Startled, she turns. The eyes are the same, light with wide pupils, solemn. There are still freckles sprinkled across her nose. Sometimes, laying next to her as she slept, Aaron would try to count the freckles. Her mouth softens. Aaron, she says, the way she used to say it. Hi, he says. Aaron does not know how to add that he, after all these years, has been looking half-heartedly for her ever since moving north. 4 years of hopeful searching, extended glances, neck craning. Doesn't know how to add that his last conversation with Kate some 22 years ago still haunts him. She still haunts him. Those eyes, the hair. Hi, Aaron says again. The kids sidle up, Megan pushing the cart, Jake snaking his arms tightly around Aaron's leg, sticking a thumb in his mouth. He reaches out and touches their heads, matching blonde hair from him, and his heart pounds. These are my kids, he tells her, Megan and Jake. They're so beautiful. Kate squats down to Jake's level. How old are you? Jake glances up at Aaron for assurance. Go on, tell her, he prods. He tells her that he is 5 and buries his face in Aaron's leg. I'm 8, Megan announces. That's great. Kate looks from his daughter to Aaron, getting back to her feet. She is wearing snow boots, a heavy coat, gear for winter in the north. I'm happy for you. Are you still living up here? I just came back. She hesitates. You remember my dad? Aaron's jaw tightens. Yeah, I do. He's cancer. He's in the final stages. He's leaving the house to me. She reaches out, touches the edge of her cart. It is filled sparsely. Milk, eggs, lunch meat, bread, the essentials. Once Aaron had taken her on a picnic. He had packed chicken into a cooler of ice, a fruit salad he'd gotten horribly wrong, a bottle of wine. He grilled the chicken at a campground at the edge of the lake, squinting out across the water as he turned it, ever so often glancing over his shoulder at her where she was sprawled in the grass on his bedspread. Eyes shut, breathing heavily, the soft rise and fall of her breasts and her shirt, the shirt's hem riding up to reveal a glimpse of pale stomach. She says, Aaron, I have to go. Will I see you around, he blurts. She purses her lips. Maybe. Aaron watches her turn and retreat, back straight. She does not look back. It feels suddenly like his hands are excruciatingly empty. Bending down, he wraps his arms around both of his children, inhales the sense of hair and skin, the familiar warmth and length and press of their bodies in his arms. The comforting reassurance, they are real, they are here, I am here, they are mine.
This is Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students at the Interlochen Arts Academy. Next, we'll hear guitarist Mackenzie Mendez performing Capriccio Arabe by Francisco Tárrega. Thank you.
This is Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students at the Interlochen Arts Academy. Up next, Alyssa Brown, Leonardo Cubillo, Sydney Lusby, and Madeline Stern from the Wind Chamber class perform three pieces by Eugène Beaux-Arts.
Thank you.
You're tuned in to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students at the Interlochen Arts Academy. An excerpt from Shakespeare's Coriolanus next, featuring Jennifer Klink, Casey McMahon, Haley Robinson, and Caitlin Kilgore. Thaddeus Kashuba sets the scene.
In this brief scene from William Shakespeare's Coriolanus, the title character's mother, Volumnia, berates her daughter-in-law, Marcius's young wife, Virgilia, for worrying too much about her husband, who is off to war against the rebel Volscians. She believes that a military wife should remain strong and stoic during her husband's necessary absence, and she is not shy about expressing her opinion. Before the tension between them can escalate into full argument, they are visited unexpectedly by their friend and neighbor, the Lady Valeria.
I pray you, daughter, sing, or express yourself in a more comfortable sort. If my son were my husband, I should freely rejoice in that absence wherein he won honor, than in the embracements of his bed where he would show most love. When yet he was but tender-bodied, and the only son of my womb, I, considering how honor would become such a person, was pleased to let him seek danger where he was like to find fame. So to a cruel war I sent him, from whence he returned. His brow was bound with oak. I tell thee, daughter, I sprang not more in joy at first hearing he was a man-child than in first seeing he had proved himself a man.
But had he died in the business, madam, how then?
Then his good report should have been my son. I therein would have found issue. Hear me profess sincerely. Had I a dozen sons, each in my love alike, and none less dear than thine and my good Marcius, I had rather had 11 die nobly for their country than one voluptuously surfeit out of action.
Madam, the Lady Valeria is come to visit you.
Beseech you, give me leave to retire myself.
Indeed, you shall not. Methinks I hear hither your husband's drum. See him pluck Aufidius down by the hair, as children from a bear the Volsci shunning him. Methinks I see him stamp thus, and call thus, come on, you cowards! You were got in fear, though you were born in Rome. His bloody brow, with his fierce hand then wiping, forth he goes to fell...
His bloody brow? Oh, God, no blood!
Away, you fool! It more becomes a man than guilt his trophy! Tell Valeria we are fit to bid her welcome.
Heavens bless my lord from fell Aufidius.
He'll beat Aufidius's head below his knee and tread upon his neck.
My ladies both, good day to you.
Sweet madam.
I am glad to see your ladyship.
How do you both? You are manifest housekeepers. What are you sewing here? A fine spot, in good faith. How does your little son?
I thank your ladyship. Well, good madam.
He had rather see the swords and hear a drum than look upon his schoolmaster.
On my word, his father's son. I'll swear 'tis a very pretty boy. On my troth, I saw him run after a gilded butterfly, and when he caught it, he let it go again. Then after it again, and over he comes, and again, catched it again. And whether his fall enraged him or how 'twas, he did so set his teeth and tear it. Oh, I warrant it how he ripped it.
One of his father's moods.
Indeed. La, 'tis a noble child.
A crack, madam.
Come, lay aside your stitchery. I must have you play the idle housewife with me this afternoon.
No, good madam, I will not out of doors.
Not out of doors?
She shall.
Indeed, no. By your patience, I'll not over the threshold till my lord return from the wars.
Why, I pray you?
She would be another Penelope. Yet, they say, all the yarn she spun in Ulysses' absence did but fill Ithaca full of moss. Come, you shall go with us.
No. Good madam, pardon me, indeed I will not forth.
In truth, La, go with me, and I'll tell you excellent news of your husband.
Oh? Good madam, there can be none yet.
Verily, I do not jest with you. There came news from him last night.
Indeed, madam?
In earnest, it's true. I heard a senator speak it. Thus it is. The Volscians have an army forth, against whom Cominius, the general, is gone, with one part our Roman power. Your lord and Titus Larsus are set down before their city Cryli, they nothing doubt prevailing, and to make it brief wars. This is true, on mine honor, and so, I pray, go with us.
Give me excuse, good madam. I will obey you in everything hereafter.
Let her alone, lady. As she is now, she will but disease our better mirth.
In troth, I think she would. Fare you well, then. Come, good, sweet lady. Prithee, Virgilia, turn thy solemnness out of door and go along with us.
No, at a word, good madam, indeed I must not. I wish you much mirth.
Well then, farewell.
Glad you could tune in for Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by students at the Interlochen Arts Academy. Singer-songwriter Sydney Robinson is our next performer. Here she tells us about the inspiration for her song, Heyo.
Well, I got inspired because a friend of mine back home plays baseball, and I was starting to think he has, like, these huge dreams about being in the big leagues. And I started to think, what if those dreams don't come true? And maybe not just for him, but for anyone. But then I realized you would probably carry things with you that you took from the experiences you had in high school when that was your big dream. And so I tried to incorporate these little moments that still make you feel like you've made it to the big times.
Ten years ago, you couldn't wait to throw the starting pitch at your first varsity game. Your uniform was brand new, stitched with the number 2 right on the back beneath your last name. She sat up in the bleachers as the static of the speakers washed over the crowd and made her heart bubble and beat. We all sang and stomped our feet. Hey, oh, watch them go. Show your love and bring it home. Shout it high, shout it low, and let them know. He moved to the city, she moved out west, grew up, settled down like all the rest. Those big league dreams got too big for that small town boy.
I'm Matthew Fiegel. I played Jadot by Maurice Ravel. Translated, it means water games or the fountain, and the piece just shows the different colors and textures of water. Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Collage. The comparative arts major is designed for students who want to pursue in-depth, self-directed study of multiple disciplines. Through hands-on projects, academic work, and exploration in the arts, comparative arts students cultivate methods of research, critical thinking, communication, and collaborative skills. This example is an audio project produced by Elena Veroshekina and John Baird.
When you think about love, what's the first person or like thing which comes to your mind?
Wow.
Probably my family.
Oh my gosh, I feel butterflies, you know? I feel really happy.
It's someone who's caring, who is genuine.
Love is action.
It's almost bliss.
Warm, and I feel cared for, and I know I'm safe.
And then really sad, because like I know this is not gonna happen, so I feel really sad and...
cliche, but it is a warm and fuzzy feeling inside.
Love is respect and caring and placing others' well-being ahead of some of our needs and cares.
Hi there, I'm Tevin Goldberg from Astoria, Oregon, and pianist for both of the jazz combos. This is a recording of the jazz standard Here's That Rainy Day, which is one of my favorite tunes and is a beautiful, easy swinging ballad that really highlights the tone of the ensemble. And this is played for you by one of our jazz combos.
Thank you.
We're nearing the end of Radio Collage, but we still have enough time for a performance by the Arts Academy Band. Here's an excerpt from Pineapple Paul by Sir Arthur Sullivan.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Radio Collage, back-to-back performances by Interlochen Arts Academy students from the 2013-2014 school year. Radio Collage is a production of Interlochen Public Radio. Production assistance came from
Daniela Sanchez,
Ryan Apathy,
Katie Larson,
and Dylan McBride. This is Classical IPR.